Today, we're joined by Peter Isaacson, CMO at Invoca. Hi, Peter. Thanks so much for being here today on the podcast.
Hi, Anthony. My pleasure.
It's great to have you here. So before we get started with the kind of main topic of our discussion, I'm sure the audience at home would just love to hear a little bit more about you and your journey to your current position at Invoca.
Sure. So a little bit about my background. So started in advertising many years ago, realized I wanted to be on the brand or client side. Moved from New York to Silicon Valley and worked for a number of years at Adobe. During my time at Adobe, I had kind of three main jobs there. One was head of brand marketing, one was head of worldwide field marketing, and one was head of the largest vertical at the time at Adobe, education. By that time, I thought that I could package up those skills, those experiences that I had learned at Adobe into what my goal was to become a CMO. And I was able to transition to become CMO at MicroStrategy, later moved on to become CMO at Castlight Health, and then was 7+ years as CMO at Demandbase, a B2B MarTech company that was really the pioneers in account-based marketing back in the day. At the end of that that run, was looking for a change and went and did a couple of years as CMO at a company called Replicant, which is one of the leaders in contact center automation. So learned the contact center space. After a couple of years there, some interesting things happening in terms of disruption through AI, and decided to move over and take the MarTech experience that I had gained at Demandbase, combined with the contact center and sales side space that I had experienced at Replicant, and join Invoca, which really straddles both of those disciplines, selling to MarTech and selling into contact centers. And here I am.
That's great to hear. I love it when we have people who've been around in the marketing space long enough to have called it advertising. So it's great to hear. I feel like it's kind of been rebranded, you know? I mean, obviously marketing involves a lot of different things. But I'm just curious. I didn't plan.
Stick around. I'll have lots of those kind of retro references for you, of course.
I didn't plan this one, actually, but I just thought I'd ask you, like, what is, in the past couple of decades, what's the biggest change that you've seen in the marketing kind of space? Like, well, what do you think is the most dramatic shift or the most significant change in your time?
Without question, it's the proliferation of marketing tech and sales tech tools that are available to us. Again, dating myself, back in my days at Adobe, we had this crazy process. All technology had to go through our IT organization. So you would actually have to, during planning, so once a year, you would actually have to make your business requests and prioritize and basically beg for technology to come your way on the marketing side. You'd actually have to transfer money over into the IT organization in order for them to do it. And then they take all of that funding and then prioritize kind of where you fell on the list. And your priority might be at the end of the fiscal year. So marketing there was the redheaded stepchild. So finance would be first, sales would be first, like HR would get their technology before marketing did. Anyway, fast forward when the cloud happened and suddenly we were, I hate to say it, unencumbered by the requirements of IT. We could actually go out and have cloud-based applications that didn't require IT to actually approve it and set up the integrations and stuff like that. We could just move. And that led to this explosion of marketing technology that was at our disposal. And for both mainly good, but also bad, right? In terms of suddenly there was this massive amount of like crazy spending and a proliferation of like these Frankenstacks and stuff like that, where marketers just went crazy and invested in all kinds of things. So That's definitely the biggest change that I've seen.
Yeah, I thought you might say that. I love that phrase, by the way. I'm going to steal that Frankenstacks. That's a fantastic phrase. I love it. So let's talk a little bit more about Invoker then. Like, for those who might not be familiar with Invoker, what is it that they do and how do they fit into the kind of marketing landscape?
Yeah. So the kind of in a nutshell, what Invoker does is we sell into B2C companies that have a high consideration purchase, and we basically connect the buyer journey, even as it transitions from online and digital to offline. So what that means is, as there's a buyer journey for AT&T is a major customer of ours, as someone that's interested in buying a phone plan from AT&T, usually they're going to start off digital, right? They're going to start investigating online. They're going to start comparing plans, things like that. It's a pretty sizable purchase, though, and you can get locked in for, you know, a year or two for the package that you're looking at. And for a lot of people, they just want to talk to someone, an expert that's going to help them, give them confidence that they're making the right decision. So they pick up the phone and call the number that they see on the website or in a campaign ad or something like that. At that point, the buyer journey is totally fractured. All this great digital data that has come from the journey that this person has been on, maybe they've even put the gold or platinum package in a shopping cart before they decided, I'm going to talk to someone. And now all of that's lost. And it hurts the marketers because they don't know whether all of that journey has led to a sale, right? Mm-hmm. A positive outcome. So they can't optimize their media investment. But it also hurts the sales team because now someone's just picking up the phone, calling them. They've got to start over. They've got to ask some questions. What are you interested in? What are you looking for? When they've already put something in the cart or been investigating certain packages, right? But it's really the customer themselves that are most impacted by this because they've got to start all over. So the buyer journey is really not a great experience because they've done all this work. Now they've got to start explaining all this stuff again to someone on the phone. So we have the data that actually connects that entire buyer journey and makes it a more seamless experience. And it benefits the marketers so that they can optimize the channels and the media and the campaigns. And it benefits the sales and contact centers because now they can actually have a better customer experience and close more business for them and drive more revenue.
Yeah, that's great. I think you know, we're talking about Frankenstacks, massive tech stacks. I think if there's one thing that these tech stacks, the technology should be utilized for is removing friction from the buyer journey. I think, especially with the data to access, the access to data that we have. I imagine one of the challenges in the past was just pulling that all together, like you said. Yeah,
exactly. And that's so in terms of like the Frankenstack, maybe this is going to be a theme of the podcast.
We're going to call it that. That's what we're going to call it.
But the one of the things that our customers love about us is the fact that we are making all their other technology investments and their data platforms more valuable. So we inject first party and zero party data from the phone call into the CDP, into the marketing analytics tool that they're using, into their Google Ads so that they can become more efficient and effective in their media investment that they're making. So all of that data goes throughout the data ecosystem that a customer has, and in many cases, we sell into a lot of very large enterprises, very complex ecosystems, but it makes those investments in that tech stack for customers even more valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds brilliant. So let's move on to our next bit then. And I wanted to talk to you about this new report that Invoker have published, because, and this fits in nicely what we're talking about, because I feel like you can't talk about technology and AI these days and marketing these days without talking about AI. It just comes up in every conversation. So you guys have published this AI and B2C marketing report, which I think is really interesting as well, specifically, you know, targeting B2C. And I'm just wondering, what was the motivating factor behind this report? What was it you guys were hoping to uncover here?
Yeah, this is the second year in a row that that we've done it, which which actually makes it kind of even more valuable because you can start to kind of, for marketers, two data points equals a trend. So sometimes one data point equals a trend for a marketer, but you can start to kind of connect kind of where the mindset is shifting for marketers around AI. AI is having such a big impact, first on the mindset of marketers and now on the business and how we get things done as marketers. So we really wanted to understand how marketers were, from CMOs to managers, were feeling about AI and how they were embracing it and what their hopes and fears were around AI. That's why we initiated the survey a year ago and did it again, fielded it again this year.
And what was the general, like, if the, what was the biggest change from last year's report to this report, do you think? What was the major thing? Yeah.
I mean, there's so many like great nuggets in it, but I'd say the most important is that the level of optimism has increased markedly. The mindset was positive last year, but now there's a shift to, it's actually doing things for me. I'm actually confident in its ability, rather than just, I think it's going to be good and I'm going to kick the tires and cross my fingers. We're seeing a transition, even in the past year, to no, I'm getting actual value out of this and it's helping me with my job.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think now that it's become so ubiquitous in people's work, I think that goes without saying. And I always think as well, like that's true of any technological development, isn't it? Like, there's always the fear at the beginning with pretty much everything. And then once people realize what it can actually do for their lives, then, and I also think with AI as well, like, I think as well as seeing the benefits, people understand the limitations of it. And I wonder if that has kind of like quelled or appeased some of the fears that people had initially. You know, they realize that it's actually a tool that I can use. It needs human input, you know, perhaps.
I think you're right. There has been a shift in the past year in people feeling that AI was going to take their job to feeling like, no, AI is going to make my job better, easier, more effective. So there's still a healthy cohort of people thinking like, no, AI is going to help me take my job. It's something like 40%. But it has shifted in the past year to something like 57 or high 50% believe that it's going to make their job more effective, more helpful. And I think the transition, if I can kind of parse through the data and draw a conclusion, I think what's happened is as people have started actually using the tools rather than just hearing about them, they're seeing like, wow, this is actually really cool. I can do this so much easier. I can use it for, you know, not just writing a blog, but summarizing it, breaking it into pieces. I can use it for research. I can use it for creating headlines. As people have used it, they've become more comfortable with it.
Yeah, I think the big one that for me is the coding. The help with coding, how it's made it like more accessible for, especially using like back-end software, for people like me who are not tech whizzes by any chance, you know, by any stretch or any definition, just how much easier it's made that kind of thing. It's just a real blessing, especially for people, you know, who work in things like SaaS or anything like that software. It's, you know, that's my two cents, the big one that I've seen, big benefit. So let's dig into some of the key findings then. So one of them was that people have found that 80% of the people that you surveyed found that it's helped to increase their ROI. Now, this is really significant. Now, what do you think is driving this specifically? Is it efficiency? What's your take on this?
Yeah, I think that that it is both efficiency and effectiveness and performance. So clearly there's efficiency gains in this. I mean, so going back to your comment about coding, AWS came out with this crazy stat. Who knows if it's true or not, but they said something like, it was something like 40,000 human hours per like 6 months or something like that, that they had saved by using AI for coding applications on their site. So there's some extraordinary thing. So there's definitely efficiency gains in there. I think that there's a performance gain as well, as folks are using it to actually mine insights into media mix modeling, for instance, and drawing conclusions about what's driving their marketing outcomes and what's actually contributing not to clicks but to actual revenue. And and quite frequently, right, that's a pretty sophisticated mix of media. And through AI, you can kind of parse through that and actually draw some conclusions about how you should invest your marketing dollars. And that's not just an efficiency gain, that's an outcome and effectiveness and performance gain. So I think it's a combination of both.
That's a real gift, isn't it, to marketers as well? I mean, from doing this, from hosting this podcast, one of the things that, you know, I hear people say so often is, you know, the marketing, you described it as the redheaded stepchild. And I think it was, you know, maybe a more formal way of putting it would be that people maybe viewed it as like as a cost center.
Yeah.
In the past, you know, so having access to that kind of data where you can really show the impact that your marketing efforts are making, I imagine it makes that's a huge win. CMOs like yourself. Yeah,
absolutely. And that was another data point that was really interesting in the research, which was we asked who in the company leads the effort for AI adoption throughout the company. And the dominant role that leads AI in a company is the CMO. Which is really interesting, right? Because it has benefits for finance, it has benefits for R&D, as you said, but the CMO is typically leading the charge on AI implementation around a company. And that's just a sign of the relative importance of marketing, transitioning from kind of being viewed as a cost center to being an advocate for change and transformation within a company.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting to hear, definitely. So this is another tidbit we found, was that 93% of marketers reported positive experiences with AI tools in 2024. So what do you think has changed with the tools in particular? Or is this something that shifted kind of in people's mindset rather than the tools themselves? Or have the tools developed themselves? Or is it a bit of both? What do you think's happened here?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both, right? I think it's about, you know, people have certainly transitioned from, oh, AI is ChatGPT and prompts, and I can ask it a bunch of questions and it'll give me answers on kind of the best recipe for beef Wellington.
I wouldn't say no to that. But
who doesn't want the best recipe for beef Wellington?
Yeah, sure.
By the way, the answer to that is my mother has the best recipe.
Oh, I see. That's right. Well, yeah, sure.
No, but it's transitioned from that to actual practical tools that that folks are really kind of digging in and using. I think the most extraordinary thing is not that we're going through this progression of vague understanding and some concern, maybe trepidation, to full, you know, scale embrace of it. That's not surprising. What's surprising is how compressed that time frame has been. I mean, it's just happened. Technology moves fast. AI technology is moving at warp speed. And that, I think, is what's really interesting, that the community, the marketing kind of community, has transitioned so quickly from, I think this might be good and everyone's talking about it, to, oh my God, this is like really fundamental and transformational.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And also people, I think, just becoming more familiar, more adept with things, I think, rather than overwhelmed is gonna make a big difference, isn't it? There's a learning curve, isn't there, with any tool. And I feel like, you know, probably a lot of people in marketing teams have had to become a lot more. I mean, I think there's probably a positive and a negative side to it, actually. We did a podcast recently where one of the CMOs we were talking to was Bonnie Habian at Excalibur, was saying that it was you know, she was almost overwhelmed by it. She's a kind of old school marketer like yourself, goes back a long way. And she was like, it feels like she's just constantly interacting with tools all day, you know? Yeah. So there's a downside to some people in that regard. But then I guess that, you know, there's massive gains in terms of like you said, just the access to data and the efficiency and things like that. But I can definitely see how people could just get to the point of being like, oh, it's a tech overload. You know, it's all I'm doing is kind of looking at data all day or trying to get to grips with new systems, you know? Definitely see that. Yeah.
I mean, it can be overwhelming. I think, you know, that might happen. But right now, I think people are, what I've seen is marketers are really moving to embrace it and excited about it, and not yet reaching the overwhelmed state.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right on this. So the report talked about just a kind of general shift in mindset. And one of them was how marketers perceive AI's impact on jobs, with a sort of growing optimism about this in particular. So how do you see this like kind of playing out? Like, what is the, now that the trepidation and the fear is over, well, or it seems to have at least diminished a little bit. How do you see, you know, AI and marketing going on, you know, going hand in hand in future? What do you predict for the future is basically what I'm asking.
Yeah. So I somewhat glibly said at a conference that I was presenting at a few years ago that AI is going to destroy the world, but not before it actually does some really cool things for marketers. We're in that sweet spot right now where it hasn't destroyed the world, but it's doing really cool things. It's providing some great opportunities for marketers. So, you know, what's going to happen in the future? Like, without question, AI is going to create some efficiencies, and some jobs as we know it are going to go away. Without question, going to happen. I've got a son that's very into data analytics, and I was showing him some of the AI agents that are out there right now that are able to actually populate and drive sophisticated data analysis. And I was like, yeah, I don't think data analytics positions are going to be around in 5 years. AI is just making that analysis so easy. There will be a different role that's created in terms of creating those AI agents and the prompts and stuff, but that's absolutely going to happen. I also think that AI is going to become so mainstream that it's not even considered, like we're not thinking about, oh, how are we going to use AI? It's just going to be, how are we getting this task done? How are we improving our performance? And there are going to be tools out there that obviously are just embedded and run on AI to actually perform the task. So it's already becoming very, very mainstream. But yeah. I do think the transition period that we're in right now is going from experimentation to operationalization, right? From like actual, like, I think this is cool. We've got a couple of folks in the department using it. To no, this is how we get work done. This is a standardized process that we're using.
I think people, it's reaching a point, and certainly with me, where like I don't even realize I'm using it sometimes. like with certain tools that we use, like for example, I was using Opus Clip to create shorts from video, and of course it does the auto captions. Which of course I don't even think about. I'm just like, oh, there they are. Yeah, you know, let's edit them a little bit. And like, it doesn't even occur to me. That's AI working in the background doing that. You know, I think you're right. I think not only will it just become part of our daily operations, but people won't even be aware that they're using it anymore. It's going to be so baked into what we're doing on a day-to-day basis all the time, I think is probably the reality. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So let's go into maybe, you know, get some of the skepticism. I feel like you can't talk about this without talking about some of the fears. So what is the, you know, I'm curious to hear about your own observations about this. Like, have you noticed some kind of malpractice already in terms of how people are using it? Some kind of case studies in terms of how you shouldn't use it? And how do you think it could potentially go wrong, and how can we strike the right balance? Let's just kind of address those fears head on, especially that you encountered in the report.
Yeah. I think that, maybe the analogy is data governance, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as data proliferated and first party data became, ubiquitous, and third party data became ubiquitous, companies really struggled with data governance because suddenly there were laws imparted on folks, and data privacy initiatives and things. And data governance became a really important kind of thing that marketers had to grapple with. And I think that the same analogy holds true for AI in the sense that there's going to have to be some governance, right? Healthcare companies, financial services companies, they're grappling with this right now. Like, they can't have their data sets go out into an AI model that is going to draw conclusions and start, targeting them for specific health issues that they have, right? Like, total violation of, in America, HIPAA and things like that. So I think the analogy is the data governance that we've got. There's AI governance, right? Like, what data sets are you using? Are you using your own customer's data set to actually draw some conclusions? How is that being anonymized? Like, all of those things go into it. And quite frankly, like, we're just much further along on data governance than we are on AI governance. So that's where you're going to see some folks make some bad missteps, quite frankly, with customer data and how AI is used and some of the things that AI does. But we're still in early days for that. We're kind of out ahead of our skis, quite frankly, in our ability to, like, we're all excited about it, but mistakes are being made and will continue to be made.
Some very high profile mistakes as well, actually, recently, some pretty significant data breaches and data leaks. And of course, that's incredibly damaging, isn't it, for any company? Like, once you get to that, if customers don't feel safe, their data, having their data with you, like, that is, I mean, it's game over. It seems like at that point, I don't know if there's any coming back from that. So that's definitely a very significant fear, isn't it? That requires some, human, what's it called? Supervision. Careful supervision.
I agree. What's going to be interesting is how that supervision occurs, because governments are, at least in the United States, congressional leaders, senators, whoever, like, they're just catching up to, like, what the internet means. So they're actually be able to, like, actually understand AI and the implications of it and create, coherent laws that guide, or policies that guide. I just don't think that's going to happen in a meaningful or productive way, which means the governance is going to happen from within.
From within
the technology industry. And I'm not advocating that, like, we should just be a self-regulating industry. I'm just saying that the reality is that it's going to take a while for governments and policy to catch up to the implications of AI.
Maybe a few generations. Frankly, I mean, and the reality with these things, I mentioned some high profile breaches, like, it sometimes things have to go wrong, sadly, in order for there to be legislation with this kind of thing. And that's true of anything. And that's kind of scary, because in a way, it's kind of like, well, it's kind of going to be a bit of a trial and error. We learn from these mistakes. They become, as I said, like, case studies for how not to do it, which is not what you don't want to be, that case study, but it kind of is inevitable, I think, with so many people using it. I think
think back with data, right? Like, in 2015, 2016, when it came out that, was it Cambridge Analytics was mining, had created an app that was very popular, and they used it to basically mine all the personal data from Facebook users and use that for marketing for politics, right? It was this, And everyone that has just like not paid attention and clicked yes and basically gave Facebook access and their vendor partners like massive access to all their personal data freaked out and went, what? That's how they're using it? Oh my God. And now Congress got involved and there were hearings, you know, and everyone, now everyone's freaked out about privacy. But it took that kind of aha moment for people to realize it. I don't think we've had that aha moment necessarily with AI, but yeah, it's probably coming.
It definitely will come, I think. Yeah, 100%. Well, I could talk to you about AI all day, but we are going to talk about something else today, which is, I think a point, you know, from my own experience of talking to marketers still resonates a lot, which is sales and marketing alignment. In particular, one of the things that I've noticed recently is kind of like we were saying, this shift of marketing going from being considered a cost center to being a kind of growth center, or however you phrase it, you probably have a better phrase for it than me, but one that is, you know, very mindful of being tied in with, you know, impact on revenue and growth within a company and that kind of thing. So let's talk about that in particular, you know, because it's a big sticking point for lots of companies. So why is this alignment become such a big hot issue? You could probably fill me in, you know, on what the historical context of this is. Why is there that friction there historically between sales and marketing? Where's it come from?
Well, so, you know, there are two different business models. There's B2B and there's B2C. For B2B, there was always friction because there was a constant infighting between sales and marketing teams about lead volume, lead quality. It was like if the lead volume was okay, then the quality wasn't good according to sales. If the lead volume was low, that, you know, there was always something to kind of complain about. And over the past decade, really, in part because of companies taking an account-based approach, ABM, which forced sales and marketing organizations to align more effectively against the accounts that were going to make the biggest impact on their business. B2B companies have had that alignment now, and they really focus on it. It hasn't really happened with B2C companies, which is interesting because B2C has always kind of led the way for with marketing and technology and kind of processes, but they're lagging there. And I think it's because B2C historically was a little bit more focused on clicks and cost per leads and cost per acquisition and some things like that that were more campaign centric and further removed from revenue. Mm-hmm. But as B2C companies and B2C marketing teams have gotten more focused on and being driven to be more focused by the CEO, by the CFO, by, you know, the full C-suite team, they have looked at, wait a second, what's happening at the back end? Like, how is sales driving, you know, closing the leads that we're giving? How is it impacting business? How is it driving revenue? And that has started to force a reckoning between marketing and sales teams and marketing and contact centers to say, wait a second, we have to come together as a revenue team because we both play an important role in accomplishing this. So.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one of the shifts I've seen is the rise of what is it called, the CRO. It's kind of an overlap, right, between the CMO and, well, we've seen CMOs transition to that sometimes, don't they? Or maybe, it's becoming a thing. Maybe marketing will be rebranded again. I don't know, something else. I don't know.
So I'll show my marketing bias here. I think it's really difficult for a sales leader to take over marketing because, 20 years ago, it was much more direct and simple, I would say. But as we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, the proliferation of marketing technology and the complexity of it is really, really tough to get your head around. I think it's difficult for sales to kind of do that. But that was the tradition. 20 years ago, it was kind of like a sales lead would, you know, get to a certain kind of point in their career and they would take over marketing as well. I think I don't see that as often. What I am seeing is more marketers taking over either sales or contact center responsibility and driving that as a single revenue team. And that's so maybe marketing will get rebranded, as you said, but that's something that I'm starting to see little kind of kernels of movement on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and do you think that that is all just down to, like you said, the proliferation of data that we have access to now, the fact that we can really state our case as a marketer and say, like, look, this is how we're driving revenue. We can show how we're doing it. And we can really make more of strategic efforts to kind of drive, you know, the bottom line. Is that what the result, is that the result of that, do you think? Is that why it's kind of, you know, it's becoming more of a, you know, a revenue function, whatever it is?
Yeah, Anthony, I think that's it. I think until marketers were able to really confidently connect what they were doing and what they were running and what they were investing in and demonstrating the impact on top line revenue and sometimes bottom line earnings and profitability, but at least the top line revenue, until you were able to actually draw a hard line and not a dotted line, cross your fingers kind of, I think this is the case. Like, until that happened, it was really difficult for marketers to take more ownership of, of. I think it's exactly that, Anthony. It's the data and the ability to connect the marketing activities to revenue, which has transformed it.
Yeah, and it was probably always there, really, but it's just kind of been invisible. And because of that, there was the kind of skepticism about it in some areas, wasn't it? And now you can point to it. You can say, look, well, this is what it's the effect that it has, you know? Yeah, yes. big time. So what role do you think that technology, let's link this in with what we were talking about before, AI in particular, and let just tech stacks in general, you know, the various tools that you use as a marketer, what role does that have to play in connecting and aligning marketing and sales, do you think?
Yeah, I think there's just so much that is going to be transformed through AI, through technology to connect marketing and sales. Down to what the marketing mix is, as I talked about earlier, to really fine tune kind of what's driving revenue, to identifying kind of what the best leads are so that you can really kind of follow up on the accounts and the opportunities that matter. At Invoca, we have AI throughout our tech stack and really throughout the buyer journey. We're trying to kind of apply it. But one example is just for contact centers, being able to sort through the hundreds of thousands of calls that some companies get and be able to, through AI, parse through this and see what signals are there in the call that lead to an appointment, for a doctor's appointment, or to a sale, to a positive outcome that you're trying to drive, so that you can identify those and actually make the caller experience better. So, and that connects back into the marketing team. So I think the connection between sales and marketing is only going to be strengthened by the data that we have and by the use of AI to actually draw conclusions from how that buyer journey is progressing.
So was part of the issue then that, you know, we talk about the buyer journey, that kind of handover perhaps of the information between the two teams. So then I guess what the technology or the AI fills in the gap in here is that the human error, perhaps, like, you know, if you're providing information to sales on a particular prospect, particularly whatever it is. There are things that, as a human being, you're not going to pick up on. You're not going to notice that the AI is gonna have access to through call data or whatever it is. So it's kind of filling in, the gaps that our natural human limitations provide, I guess.
Like when the data sets become so massive, like no human can really kind of parse through them. Then you need technology to step in and help draw those conclusions. And AI is such a perfect model for helping humans, augmenting humans to actually identify those trends and make those conclusions and improve the investments that they're making.
So you must have heard this, you know, this complaint a lot, I'd imagine, you know, that, oh, the, you know, sales and marketing not aligned properly, or they're not working together well and things like that. What, in your experience, what are the practical steps if this is a problem? What do people need to do to make this happen? I mean, you've mentioned that in today's current climate, it's probably easier than ever, but I imagine it's still a problem. So where, if someone comes to you with this problem, what's your answer usually? What would you say?
Yeah. So first of all, talk. How often you hear like, once a quarter and, you know, things like that. So a true sales and marketing alignment comes from actual collaboration and getting together and actually talking. And that doesn't mean going through the motions of like, yeah, I'm busy, you're busy, how are things going? Good. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk again in a month. But really understanding each other's challenges, like the sales team's challenges, the marketing team's challenges, what they're seeing out in the market. Second is you have to share metrics. You have to have a common goal, because if marketing says that, you know what, I'm just focused on efficiency over here and I'm trying to like get a better kind of efficiency score for the investments that I'm making and the amount of leads that I'm driving, and sales is focused on, you know, appointments, if you're a hospital, for instance, or actual transaction sales at the back end, then you're never going to align because you're focused on different things. You're judging your performance on different metrics. So you have to agree on like what the core metrics are that you are both going to hold each other accountable for and be aligned to it, so that when one team wins, the other team is winning. When one team is losing and the business isn't performing, both sides feel that pain.
Yes.
So that's the most important thing. And then the final thing is just honest accountability, like holding each other accountable in a productive way, not an accusatory way, but you've got to have those honest conversations. Like, hey, if like, all the data is showing that we're teeing up things really effectively, but they're not resulting in closed won business or revenue, then marketing's got to have an honest conversation with sales. Or if sales is saying, look, the volume has gone, like, there's got to be honest conversation. So those are the three kind of key pillars, I would say, to sales and marketing becoming better aligned.
I love that you mentioned about, you know, making your KPIs everyone's problem. In a way, yeah. I think it is about breaking through those silos of kind of like, I guess people, that mentality of kind of like, well, you know, as long as I'm hitting my goals or you're hitting, you know, like, I don't care what's going on there. But then actually having that transparency and realizing, well, the shortcomings in my role are connected to what's not going right with what you're doing. That really, that makes a big difference, doesn't it? I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So, thanks so much, Peter. I mean, this has been really, really fantastic. Really, really insightful, brilliant conversation. I've enjoyed it a lot. The Invoca report, AI, the AI report from Invoca is out now. It's available on the Invoca website. Check it out. Is there anything from your end, Peter, like, people want to find out a little bit more about yourself, reach out to you, where should they go?
LinkedIn is always a great source for that. So please reach out to me in LinkedIn. Love to continue the conversation there. Check out the AI survey. It's got a lot of really interesting things that I think will be pretty eye-opening to marketers.
Yeah, that's great. One more thing before you go. This is a question I ask everyone. What do you wish that you'd known about your, what do you wish that you someone had told you about your current position that they didn't tell you that before you got there? Like, what do you wish you'd known?
Is that the CMO role writ large?
Yeah, the CMO role. Yeah.
What would I wish someone had told me about? I think that, honestly, this is going to sound strange, but I think making sure that you understand that marketing doesn't exist in a silo, that we impact so much of an organization, and you can't just be kind of focused on your own knitting. and feel like I'm going to impact the company as long as marketing kind of, you know, hits our goals. But you have to be so engaged with sales and product and R&D and finance. And it really does play a pivotal role across the organization, and making sure that you don't have your head in the sand, that you're not siloed is a really key lesson that maybe took me too long to learn.
Yeah, well, I think it's probably true of a lot of people. Thanks so much. That's such a great comment to tie this all up, I think. Yes. Thanks, Peter. It's been great.
Anthony, really appreciate it. Love the conversation. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of CMO Convo. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a rating and review on your preferred platform. Don't forget to tune in next week for another insightful conversation with the leading CMO.